Before I start the program this morning, I wanted to acknowledge that today is Canada Day and for us to express our appreciation to our Canadian councillors. And as a side note, our parliamentarian celebrates Canada Day. Good morning. The chair calls the second meeting of the ALA Council to order. We will follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn your cell phones off or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area. Thank you. Your voting record is at your place. You should have an ivory card for this morning's meeting. If you want to speak at this meeting, please go to a microphone, wait for recognition, then give your name and indicate if you are a division counselor, a chapter counselor, a counselor at large, or a roundtable counselor. You will be asked to raise one of your hands for all votes that are not adopted by general consent. Only if the vote seems close will I call for a standing vote. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood over at the projectionist table. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councillors. I've been advised that we have well over 75 councillors present, and therefore we have a quorum. The agenda, ALA Council Document 8.6, revised on June 30, 2013 at 8:32 p.m., and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the council document pickup station in this room. I suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up to the stage and sit beside Keith Fields shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively. Thank you. Under the 24-hour rule, we have received the following resolutions to add under new business. ALA Council Document 38, the resolution in support of whistleblower Bradley Manning. ALA Council Document 41, revised on June 30, 2013, the resolution on library service to the community in a natural disaster. ALA Council Document number 42, the resolution on divestment of holdings in fossil fuel companies and libraries' role in a peaceful transition to a fossil-free economy. And ALA Council Document number 44, the resolution on prayer in ALA meetings. Do we have any other business to add? Microphone 4.
Madam President, John A. Moorman, Executive Board. I wish to add a resolution that Council Document 39 be reconsidered and referred to the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the Committee on Legislation.
Do you wish to speak to the motion?
Yes. I am very concerned that our action taken yesterday did not come with due deliberation and with the consideration of recommendations from two committees that are essential to the operation of our organization, and we should hear their input before we take action.
Is there discussion? Oh. Okay. So it's on the agenda? Okay. So I've added it to the agenda. Thank you. Is there other new business? So, hearing no further discussion, I declare the agenda adopted. The chair now directs you to ALA Council Document 18.3, and I call upon Nancy Bolt, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to present her report. And I don't think she's here.
No.
Okay. So now I will direct your attention to Council Document 27 and hope that Jim Redding is here. And there he is. I invite Jim Redding to join us here on the podium to present his report.
Good morning, Council. It's like school. Crew brings you two action items today. The first originated from the Scholarships and Study Grants Committee. They've been taking a look at themselves in a very mindful way in response to their chronic inability to do business many times because of lack of quorum, because they have committee slots given the current structure that in some cases no appointments have been made to. And in other cases, appointments have been made, but the people appointed have not attended meetings with any regularity. What this has done on occasion is put at risk being able to get sponsored awards or scholarships approved, and made the prospective funders wonder whether or not ALA is a good place to do business with, or whether they should do something else with their philanthropy. What the committee has recommended is, instead of a fairly elaborate structure that you see on page one there of your document, that it simply be collapsed into fewer members, going from the 11 here to 7, including the chair, and that all be appointed directly by the president-elect. There would still be input from the divisions through the Committee on Appointments, which consists of the division presidents-elect, so there would be guidance for the the president-elect of ALA in making those appointments. Staff liaison, Laurel Swader, for the committee has been very involved in this, and this has been a collaborative effort between staff and the committee. And CU concurs in their recommendation, and therefore I bring you action item one when council is ready for that. Okay.
So proceed.
Resolve that council approves changing the size and composition of the Scholarships and Study Grants Committee to 7 members, including the committee's chair, all to be appointed by the ALA president-elect.
Is there discussion? Seeing no indication, you're ready for the vote. All those in favor?
Wait.
Oops. Oh, sorry. Microphone two.
Jennifer Boucher, RUSA counselor. We have a lot of awards. We have a lot of everything else. In fact, I'm an award winner this year. Can you please explain again how the divisions are represented on this on the new composition?
There are two advisory committees to the president-elect in making appointments. One makes recommendations to ALA committees. That is the Committee on Appointments. I may have reversed this. It's not an everyday thing I deal with, unfortunately. But the division presidents-elect consist of the make up the membership of the Committee on Appointments, which is one of those two advisory bodies, and they make recommendations for the ALA committees. The Committee on Committees, which you elect from your own members, makes recommendations for the council committees. Every division president-elect is encouraged, exhorted, reminded as necessary by the president-elect to give them recommendations of members for those committees.
Okay. Thank you.
Now I think you may be ready for the vote. Oh, microphone three.
Molly Raffio, immediate past president, member of the executive board. I just want to reinforce what Jim has said. As someone who appointed committee members recently, this was a committee that was a challenge because of the composition. And I will speak for, I'm sure, the presiding official and the almost presiding official, that the participation of the Committee on Appointments and the President-elect is robust, and I think also that the appointing official always is looking at that kind of balance issue anyway, so I just wanted to make sure that everyone understood that this is going to help this committee do its work rather than take away representation that's important.
Thank you. All right, I'll try again. Maybe ready for the vote? Those in favor, raise one hand. Thank you. Any opposed, also raise one hand. Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, ALA Council Document 27, Item 1.
Okay, the second action item deals with reporting routines for ALA and council committees. A year or so ago, KU started looking at old efforts that were presented to council and not accepted with a proposal to sunset committees. It seemed to give way too much power to KU without the resources to carry out that power, even if it were proper, which would have allowed it to dip into divisions and roundtables, and that wasn't a good idea. We shied away from a sunset policy because we thought it would be better if committees look at themselves and decide if they need to change something about their composition, their structure, or if they need to simply cease to exist because they no longer serve the association's needs, which it's rare, but it can and does happen. We looked at the reporting document that council had approved some years earlier, the committee information update, which seemed to be largely an attendance roster, and it was tied to the assumption that committees work only at annual and the midwinter meeting and face-to-face meetings. Things have changed since then, and so we wanted to update this by retiring that form and instead having council simply adopt an expectation for committees to report in ways appropriate to each committee. At the committee chairs orientation for incoming committee chairs, President-elect Stripling gave me a great segue into my little presentation to the committee chairs by saying she wanted to hear from them many times during the year, and she wanted to look for ways in which committees could work together that they might not have discovered. That's the purpose of the KU proposal, so that you, the elected leadership, and the members know what our committees are doing. Committee reporting for some committees has been absolutely non-existent so far as the Office of Governance can determine for as long as 2 years. We don't know what those committees have been up to, nor do the members know what they've been up to. I assume the members of the committees know what they've been up to, but it hasn't been communicated. So what KU is proposing is a semi-annual reporting requirement. Why semi-annual? Why not tied to annual and midwinter? Because not all committees do their work at those times. Furthermore, we have joint committees with other organizations, and those other organizations don't meet with us at the time we meet in our face-to-face meetings. So this gives a little latitude. It just expects at least 2 reports from each committee per year. The Office of Governance will help make this happen. They will work with staff liaisons. And we want a more open-ended approach. The concept we've applied here is what composition teachers call writing prompts, giving people ideas of things you could write about, so pick what's most relevant. And we think that this will be a much more informative way of keeping the membership apprised of what their association is doing on their behalf. So the second action item, which is on page 4 of your document, it incorporates that writing prompt idea. It incorporates the semi-annual schedule. We are aware that there are a couple of committees that will have a very hard time doing a substantive report twice a year, the Committee on Elections and the Nominating Committee. The Nominating Committee does a very substantive report every fall in preparation for midwinter, giving you the candidates for council and officer positions. They don't have to do that again during the year, so they could simply refer back to that earlier report. The Committee on Elections generally meets once a year in Chicago after the ballot period has closed, and they certify the results of the election. Members of that committee have told me there's sometimes some recommendations that they have. Those really haven't been communicated to us in the past. So in the first half of the year, they would say, we'll report to you after we certify the election results in the spring. So there's some built-in flexibility to accommodate those sorts of differences in this. So what KU proposes is resolve that council approves retiring the current committee information update form to be replaced by a semi-annual report by each ALA committee and each council committee that, as appropriate, addresses. And do I need to read the bullets?
No.
Okay. All those good things that a committee can report on.
Is there discussion of the motion? I don't see anyone, so, I'll be patient. Microphone 4.
Mary Biblow, Counselor at Large. I simply want to ask this of Jim. Is there any way that, or was there any discussion on how we could get the information from the committees a little bit earlier than we normally get them, you know, since we have the internet? And we don't have to mail out the minutes or anything, but we would like to have them so that we can peruse them a little more and study them in more detail.
Mary, I believe what you're referring to are committees that come to council with action items in them. I'll use COO as a good example of that. It was about 3:30 yesterday that this got solidified, and we wanted council to be able to act on it sooner. So that's the bad part. The good part is I sent it out to the council list yesterday afternoon, about a half an hour after that meeting, in hopes that some of you would have a chance to see it last night and if council forum wanted to discuss these things. One of the things is that there are a lot of committees that do work here, we think. We haven't heard their reports, we're not sure, really. You know, it's if the tree falls, nobody's in the forest question. But the staff liaison to COO will be working with the staff liaisons to the other committees to get those reports in so that they're posted. There is a page where all these go up. They should go on every committee's website. And there are other options. There's putting these things on the Council Connect site. They're putting them out on the Council listserv. We hope that they come in a timely way after those committees have completed some work, either at midwinter or annual or at other times. The big point is there's a lot of communication that's not happening right now that we hope to stimulate and that will happen. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Is that me? Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. Jim, I want to thank you for posting that report yesterday. I had a chance to read it, and I applaud this initiative. I'm hoping that it will help remedy the situation that Ginny just mentioned, because especially for me, I ended up trying to read all the reports on the bus coming in this morning, because I use assistive technology, and it's hard for me to read them and digest them at the same time they're being presented. So again, I'll make the appeal to all committees. I know how it is. I'm on several committees and we do things at the last minute. But even 10 hours before would work. So anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. It seems to me, I'm trying to remember now, I've been on council for 9 years, and there are like 35 committees or something like that between council committees and ALA committees.
I think it's 36.
36. I was close.
Very good.
I'd swear that over the 9 years that I've been on council, I haven't seen a report from probably more than half of those committees once. Now, I think the form is great. I mean, I think that's, you know, sort of redesigning that and all that is good. But it doesn't speak to the fact that we don't actually get information given to council. So I don't know whether a lot of committees don't report, period, or whether they report and people don't think it's interesting to us or interesting enough to us to get it to us. And so I'm just sort of wondering, yeah, this is nice. It will have a better form for this. And I don't know whether this, I can't remember now whether you're supposed to do this annually. No, you're supposed to do it after every month. So there's already a semi-annual reporting thing. But does it in any way put teeth into the requirement that committees report, and in fact, that something happens with those reports that brings information to council about all those committees that don't come here and report?
The implementation method that we've envisioned is gives an important role to staff. The liaison to CU, Carrie Price from the governance office, will work with the other staff liaison. Every committee has a staff liaison. They know how to get to the committee chair. For this coming year, I think we have a very good enforcement mechanism in that our then president has made it clear to committee chairs she wants to hear from.
Or else?
I will not speak for President-elect Stripling. And if you read the copious background documents appended to this, some of which have been through multiple iterations over the last few months, one of the suggestions I made was that if the CU chair and if the staff liaison can't get action out of a committee chair, then especially in the spring when that committee chair is somebody appointed by the sitting president, that a phone call from the president might work. Presumably there's some beholdenness in that relationship. And one of the CU members said, how would the president ever have time for that? Several years ago, right before my term as ALA president began, in a moment of self-inflicted perversity sitting in the Norfolk airport, I said, how many hours am I going to spend sitting in airports waiting for delayed flights in the next year? So I started a spreadsheet. I checked it the other day. With cell phone in hand and numbers loaded, I would have had plenty of time in those 62 hours to have made some phone calls to committee chairs. Maybe not when they wanted to hear from me at time of day, but the opportunity was there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And yes, I mean, we went back trying to find reports for the last 2 years, and there's some committees. There's no track record, no paper trail.
Microphone three.
Denise Zielinski, Illinois Chapter Counselor. I've been a chair to a committee that reported to the ALA APA CU. So it was kind of, it was the same methodology. And until I was told I had to report that there was a report to turn in, I had no clue. And we just did our business and, kept going and moving along. But we didn't have that, we didn't know about it. And it wasn't in a place that we could get to, you know, like on the ALA website somewhere where chairs could go to get that information. It really needs to be communicated to the chairs of what they really need to do.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Microphone four.
Joan Weeks, Counselor at Large. I'd like to recommend something that I implemented in the IRRT when I was chairing that. We had a wiki as a one-stop shop where all of the committee reports were loaded. I know we have ALA Connect. It's a little fragmented, but the goal would be to have a one-stop shop so people could find reports. If there's 36 committees, you could line those all up, and then each committee report would be lined. I have them by year, and it's just one URL instead of endless emails where everything is scattered about. Just a suggestion.
Let me just remind counselors that we have a motion before us, and some of these comments are beginning to get into implementation. Microphone four.
Terry Grief, Kentucky Chapter Counselor. I'm the incoming chair of TOLD, and I would like to speak to this motion and say that I'd be glad to help in implement this. TOLD does a orientation for committee chairs. This time we had 21 of the chairs to attend, so this would be a great time to report that out.
Thank you. So seeing no further evidence of discussion, we'll move to the vote. Those in favor of the motion, raise one hand. Any opposed, raise one hand. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. ALA Council Document Number 27, Item 2.
If you are an avid proofreader, there's a spurious word that wasn't deleted during revision of a sentence on page 3. You can find it.
Jim, let me thank you, and please convey our thanks to the committee for all of this work. We very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 17.1 and note that Councillor Earlene Bishop-Colleen is ready to go. Thank you. Chair of the Policy Monitoring Committee, and she will present her report.
While the Policy Monitoring Committee completed work on the revised manual last year, an item from Council 2011 was not included and is here for official placement. Additionally, the changes recommended by Council 2013 at the midwinter meeting to aid in both Council and the membership meeting prepare resolutions are presented here for final text revision and inclusion into the policy manual. Action item number one, protecting library user confidentiality. At the 2011 ALA Annual Conference, the ALA Council adopted the resolution to protect library user confidentiality and self-service old practices, which was Council Document 19.3. Policy monitoring with guidance from the Office of Intellectual Freedom suggests placement under B.8.5.2, confidentiality of personally identifiable information about library users within the policy manual. PMC moves that the text be incorporated into the ALA policy manual as policy B.8.5.2.1.
Thank you. Is there discussion? So seeing no evidence of discussion, we'll act on the motion. All those in favor, raise one hand. Thank you. Any opposed, raise one hand. The motion passes. Mark your ballot. Council Document 17.1, Item 1. Thank you.
I waited this time.
Okay.
Action Item Number 2, Guidelines for Preparation of Resolutions for Council. At Council 1, 2013 ALA Midwinter Meeting, the ALA Council approved revised guidelines to aid counselors in Council Document Number 6.2 in the preparation of resolutions. PMC moves that the revised text be incorporated into the ALA policy manual as policy A.4.2.3.
Is there discussion? Microphone 3.
Al Kagan, sir, counselor. I'm looking on page 3 of the report under process number 4, which says a supplement explanation consisting of one or more expository paragraphs should accompany every resolution, clearly stating how the resolution supports ALA's strategic plan as well as its mission and our core values. Now, I think on the form, we've already got places where we're supposed to say how the resolution relates to current ALA policy, if it's new policy, etc. That seems to me very sufficient. When we start getting into the strategic plan, then it just becomes more bureaucratic. And the strategic plan is going to change over time. And if you look back 10 years, say, and we have a new strategic plan, I don't know what you would really gain from that. The other point is that there are certain resolutions that come forward that, although they may be related peripherally to the strategic plan, are not really in the strategic plan explicitly. And that actually means that a lot of current trends, activities, events would actually not fit into the resolution form very well. So I'm opposed to this supplement, and I would hope that we can not do that, and if necessary, I'll just move that we delete number 4 under process.
Al, the answer to your question would be that policy monitoring does not change policy. This is policy that was already approved by the council. We are just putting it into the manual, and we need your approval to put it to where to place it. So this has already been argued and discussed at midwinter 2013. which was Seattle, right?
Yes.
So this is not up for discussion about what it is. It's only where it's going in the manual.
Thank you.
If you want to do that, you'll have to do a different resolution.
Thank you. All right, I think we're ready for the vote. All those in favor, raise one hand. Thank you. Any opposed, also raise one hand. The motion is passed. Mark your ballot, Council Document 17.1, Item 2.
Thank you. Item Action Number 3 on page 4, Membership Meetings. At the Council 1 of 2013 ALA Midwinter Meeting, the ALA Council approved revised guidelines to aid members, Council Document 6.3, in the preparation of resolutions. PMC moves that the revised text be incorporated into the ALA policy manual as policy 8.7.4.10.
Is there discussion on this motion? I think we're ready for the vote. All those in favor, raise one hand. Thank you. Any opposed, raise one hand. This motion also passes, and this is mark your ballot, Council Document 17.1, Item 3.
Thank you. The ALA policy manual is available online for reference at the URL listed in the, at the end of the report, and will be updated to reflect these changes following conference. That's a ready reference. It's a very long manual. I don't advise printing it out. Thanks go to the PMC members, which are listed there. Bill Turner will be the incoming chair. Thank you to John Mormon, the executive board liaison, especially to Lois Ann Gregory Wood, as always, our staff liaison, who does most of the work and offers guidance and help. I'd like to take a point of personal privilege, since I've got the microphone. It'll save us time later, trust me. I have 35 years in ALA. 15 of those years have been spent on this council floor, 4 non-consecutive terms. The first 3 were 4-year terms. The last one's been a 3rd-year term. This is my last ALA council. Well, tomorrow will be, but, you know, here we are. I'd like to thank you for the privilege of serving with you. I have a new appreciation for our association because of this work, and also for the federal government, although exhausting and exasperating sometimes. I just want to say you do important work. Keep calm and carry on. Thank you.
Thank you. And we thank you for your service and particularly for your leadership of the Policy Monitoring Committee. Thank you very much. I now direct you to Council Document Number 25 and call upon Carlin Rushoff, Chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, to present her report. Carlin?
Thank you very much, Madam President. And now for the fun stuff. On behalf of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, I am bringing one action item and 2 housekeeping items. The first is a request for approval for the application of affiliate status from the Library and Information Association of New Zealand, Otorora. I practiced that one. From now on, I'll just refer to them as Lianza. The Bylaws Committee reviewed the Lianza governing documents and policies and procedures. The Constitution and Bylaws Committee voted unanimously to recommend that the application for affiliate status from Lianza be approved. We reviewed the fact that it is a not-for-profit organization. Its interests are consistent with ALA's. The organization has a sufficiently large membership, and the length and existence of it ensures continued support. Their constitution and bylaws are not in conflict with ALA's, and they do not discriminate in membership on the basis of race, creed, color, sex, sexual orientation, age, disability, or national origin.
Is there discussion of the motion? I think we may be ready for the vote. All those in favor signify by raising one hand. Thank you. Any opposed, also raise one hand. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, Council Document Number 25.
We have 2 editorial amendments to the bylaws. The first one is for Article 1 under Membership, Section 5. What we're asking is to remove the word directory since ALA no longer has a printed directory. The section will now read, the category to which any personal member belongs, except honorary and life members, shall be regarded as confidential.
Is there discussion? Microphone 4.
Brian Schottlander, Lex Division Counselor. Carlin, I have no objection to the removal of the reference to the directory. I'm curious, however, why the category life members is included in this? Why are life members' membership not confidential?
I cannot answer that question. That language was existing in the section prior to our discussion.
I can see the argument for honorary members not being, because obviously that is a status conferred by this body. Life membership, as far as I know, no one conferred it upon me. I just bought it.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large and former chair of Constitution and Bylaws. When we redid the whole Article 1 membership thing, and I think this is in Article 1, isn't it?
Yes.
That language was brought over from the previous language, and it was my understanding, and whether I dreamt this or whether somebody actually told me this, and it may have been Norman that told me this, that honorary membership was significant and honorary and therefore should be recognized, and that life members had made a strong commitment to the Association for Life by their financial is not exactly a contribution, but payment, and that this was a way of recognizing those life members who had done that. And so we kept the language in when we redid Article 1, and I see that you have kept it in this editorial thing, which is fine. But I do have a question about process here, because on the editorial changes, I didn't think that council needed to vote on strictly editorial things. So I was questioning whether we're actually voting on this.
It's my understanding we are not.
We're not. But it's an opportunity for discussion. Microphone 4.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. That was the very question I was going to ask. It might be appropriate in future if you reminded us that it was just an editorial change and there would not be a vote, because I think there was some confusion in the body. Thank you.
Thank you. That's something you and I can agree on, I'm sure.
Yes, we certainly
Thank
can.
You. So would you like to move ahead?
Yes. The other editorial change that Constitution and Bylaws recommends is in Article 4, Section 6. All we're trying to do in this case is make two phrases in a statement parallel. So we are, the section will now read, a vacancy in membership of council representing a state, provincial, or territorial chapter, division, or roundtable of the association may be filled by the chapter, division, or roundtable on an interim basis.
Any discussion on this one? Thank you, and thank the members of your committee.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you do? So I've been advised by our parliamentarian that we do need to vote on both editorial changes. So I will now ask those who are in favor of these editorial changes, please signify by raising one hand. Thank you. Any opposed, also raise one hand. Thank you. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, ALA Council Document 25, editorial. Oh, it's item 2. They've caught up with me. Thank you. And I now believe that Nancy Bolt has joined us, and I invite her to come to present her report. And this is the report of the International Relations Committee. Welcome, Nancy. And this is Council Document 18.3.
Thank you. Almost 600 international colleagues are at this conference, and they represent close to 80 countries. So we are really pleased to welcome them, to provide special orientation and programming just for them, and to make sure that all of our United States colleagues get a chance to meet them. So that was a real highlight. Another highlight of this past 6 months has to do with a resolution that you all passed in at midwinter. You passed a resolution supporting the World Intellectual Property Organization, better known as WIPO, a treaty to assist the Library Copyright Alliance in its efforts to get the U.S. delegation to WIPO to support a treaty that will achieve the goals of libraries. Despite early predictions of failure because of strong opposition from the Motion Picture Association, supporters of the treaty prevailed and the treaty passed. Carrie Russell, ALA's representative to WIPO, commented, "By passing what is an exception to copyright, WIPO demonstrated there is international support for balance in copyright law. We applaud the world delegates for approving a treaty that makes it possible for every visually impaired person around the world to have fair access to reading materials." Getting the treaty passed was only the first step. The treaty now, to be in effect in the United States, has to be passed by Congress. The Motion Picture Association has already started lobbying Congress to not pass that. So our work is not over, unfortunately, but at least ALA is definitely on record. We are also extremely pleased and thrilled to learn that ALA member Donna Sheeter from the Library of Congress was elected the new president-elect of IFLA. So that's a real yay. She will be president-elect for 2 years and then president for 2 years. She's the first IFLA president from the U.S. since Robert Wedgeworth finished his term in 1997, and she's only the third U.S. president in IFLA's 85-year history. She is joined by Loida Garcia-Fabo, who was also elected a member of the governing body, and she's back here. And we also have three other U.S. members, Lynn Rudisell, Russell Lynch, and Clara Chu, on this 20-member board. We're also pleased that 23 of 25 members nominated to IFLA committees were elected to 4-year terms. So we will continue to be a presence in IFLA. That's really great. I want to follow up on another issue that was discussed at midwinter, but action wasn't taken then, because we wanted to get more information. Following expressions of concern by Canadian members at midwinter, IRC worked with ALA President Maureen Sullivan to send a letter to James Moore, who's the Minister of Canadian Heritage and Official Languages, which is the governing body of the Library and Archives of Canada. The director of the LAC had issued a code of conduct order, which was perceived to muzzle LAC staff people in not only what might be official work, but also their participation in professional conferences or in their writings. Following our conversation with CLA, President Sullivan wrote this letter, and received a response from Minister Moore that says that the code does not preclude LAC staff from engaging in external activities / speaking engagements on their personal time. The next thing that happened was that the director of LAC was basically let go. And so the code now seems to be not in effect, or at least not at the extent that it was first thought.
In response to a search for a new LAC director, Canadian Library Information and Archive Organizations prepared a job description listing the qualifications and experience they'd like to see in a new director. The other resolution that you passed at midwinter was on the U.S. National Commission, was proposed by the U.S. National Commission of UNESCO, and that was to urge Congress to do a waiver of service and begin to fund, to pay our dues in UNESCO again. Congress did not respond to that, so that is not, that is still on the table as something that needs to be done. We are saying goodbye to three chairs of committees. ALA past president Barbara Ford was our representative to the U.S. National Commission of Libraries. Winston Tabb was our representative to the American Library in Paris. And Nancy Gwynn was the representative to the U.S. Committee of the Blue Shield. We thank all three of those for the time and effort that they spent on these issues on behalf of IRC and ALA. We, at this conference, the committee received nominations, considered them, and has made recommendations to the ALA Executive Board to appoint new people to these. And then finally, I, as chair of IRC, I've been participating in an advocacy coordinating group that's been brings together lots of advocacy groups in and out of ALA, and we thought that would be a good model for IRC. So we now have formed an International Relations Coordinating Council. It has held its first meeting via a conference call. It has members of as many ALA groups that are interested, as well as CALA and Reforma. So we are excited about being trying to do a better job of coordinating international activities in the U.S. that impact international relations. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions for Nancy Bowl? Microphone
yes.
Four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. First, a note of thanks for the letter that was sent to Minister Moore on behalf of all Canadian librarians. But he was less than exact when he responded to you. I have read the section dealing with attendance at conference and even talking to children in school, and it's labeled as a highly dangerous activity, even on your personal time. So this is still contentious. And indeed, I'm now a member of Ex Libris, which is the retired Canadian librarians, as well as a member of RMRT. So, you know, I've been dialoguing back and forth with my Canadian and American colleagues on this issue. And the other thing that has come up is the whole issue of digitization, because they've just outsourced digitization for Libraries and Archives Canada. And while some members of the profession say it's a good deal, others do not. So we're waiting to see a little bit more in that area before I can speak to it. Thank you for all your efforts. I'm cycling off at Tuesday at 9:15 when we end, but I really have support, really have appreciated the support from my colleagues on both disability issues and Canadian issues. Thank you.
Okay. So permit a reminder, this is a report, we're inviting questions.
Oops. Stephanie Bronstein, Louisiana Library Chapter Counselor, and actually I'm speaking in this instance on behalf of the Godort group, and I also have a question about the Canadian issue, and that is that we were under the impression, and given some information from librarians, that were from Canada at midwinter, that not only was this gag order a problem, but there was a problem with the fact that the government was closing many of its federal level libraries, and also was, again, I guess this follows with the idea of digitization. However, this was more along the lines of they were taking down websites and not archiving the material on those websites.
And your question is?
My question is, are we going to be able to do something at some point to address these two issues as well?
We have been working with the Canadian Library Association to find out the kinds of things that they're doing and asking how we can be in support of their activity. And Michael Dowling, who's the head of the IRO office, working with this year Maureen Sullivan and next year with Barbara Stripling, I'm sure we'll be following up as we get more information. We've been a little reluctant to act too much on our own until we have a lot of information, and our conduit of that has been primarily CLA.
Thank you.
Thank you. Another question, microphone 3.
It's not a question. Can I make a comment?
It wouldn't be in order.
Yeah.
It's not in order. Thank you.
So let me just say thank you. I'm ending my term as IRC chair, and Luis Herrera will be the incoming chair, so you will be hearing from him at midwinter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Is there a question at microphone 3?
Yes, please. Valerie Feinman, outgoing rep for the small round tables. Ma'am, I hold dual citizenship, Canadian and American, and I think that there are several of us in this mm-hmm. group. Could we join your committee? Could we visit your committee? Could we, whatever, anything that I could do to help the Canadians, I would be happy to do.
Thank you for the question.
The meetings are open. To join it, you need to talk to whoever the president is who's appointing it. We do have a lot of subcommittees, though, and those are appointed by the IRC chair. So if you're interested in being on the subcommittee, I suggest that you contact Michael Dowling and tell him, and he and Louise will together appoint the subcommittees for the coming year. And you're welcome at any time. Our next meeting is this afternoon at 1:30, and you're welcome to come.
Thank you. There now may be a question at microphone 3.
Okay. I'm going to preface my question with a comment.
And you'll be brief.
Yes.
Thank you.
I just want to thank the council and the International Relations Committee, all those who passed the resolution at midwinter, urging the United States delegation to pass the WIPO Treaty on the Blind. And I also want to extend the heartfelt thanks of the IFLA section, Library Services to People with Print Disabilities, of which I am a representative from ALA. I also wanted to quickly point out that this will not only help visually impaired people, but it will help people with all sorts of disabilities who are print disabled, mm-hmm. including ambulatory, dexterity, cognitive, people who can't hold a book, people who've had strokes, etc.
So, and the question is?
The question is, may I thank you very much?
The chair must acknowledge your finesse on that one. Thank you so much. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 22.1 and call upon Candace Morgan, who is the chair of the Freedom to Read Foundation. Actually, she's the president of the Freedom to Read Foundation, to present her special report. Welcome, Candy.
Good morning. The foundation board appreciates the opportunity to make this semi-annual report to you. You have my written report, and it's also been posted on our website, fdrf.org. Last time that I reported to you, I expressed that we had some goals that we'd set up for ourselves to increase our visibility in not only the library community, but amongst the wider support for intellectual freedom, and to increase our number of members and the engagement of those members. And, of course, to increase donations to the foundation to support our work. We've made progress. We want more progress. But I was amazed, as were other members of the boards, with what we saw at our board meeting at this conference. There were more people attending than any of us ever remembers happening, as well as members. They stayed. They asked questions. We recruited some members with that. And there were representatives from 5 countries there: India, Egypt, Guatemala, Mexico, and Sweden. That really cheered us up in terms of our visibility issue. Now, as usual, I'm going to ask you for some help. We have not gone far enough. So I know you're all very busy people, so I have a suggestion for something that each of you can do that will not take you much effort at all. As I mentioned, our report is available on FDRF.org. I ask each of you to survey all of the listservs in your state that have anything relationship to do with the protection of privacy rights, intellectual freedom rights, and also, of course, libraries. I ask that you send out a message introducing the Freedom to Read Foundation, drawing attention to this annual report, mentioning that membership is only $35, and include a link to FDRF.org. Our new website is now fully functional. It is easy to use. It is stable. And so it was an easy way for people to join. Finally, check to make sure that your state chapter is a member of FDRF. We still have 6 chapters that are not. And it's extremely important for us to be able to present a totally across all states that membership. And finally, I'd like to announce that Julius Jefferson will be the next president of the Freedom to Read Foundation Board.
And Candy, I'd like you to know that your treasurer and our treasurer, Jim Neal, yesterday, maybe not yesterday, but at this conference, invited, encouraged everyone in this body to join the Freedom to Read Foundation.
Very good. Thank you, Jim.
Microphone 4. Question?
Yes. Candace, you asked us to send out...
Who are you, Larry?
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. You asked us to send out information about the Freedom to Read Foundation, and I think that's a wonderful idea. It would make it a whole lot easier if you'd be willing to send sort of
a template.
Thank you.
I would be happy to do so. And the reason, you know, we send this all out, but when you so many things come on your email these days that if you can see the name of somebody you know or somebody that's identified in your state, they're much more likely to respond. So please. Take that action, and we will appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next item of business is mine, and that is to recognize the retiring counselors and executive board members. And let me just tell you before I begin to do this, following this, we'll take a break, and that break enables photos to be taken of these individuals, but of course it also gives each of you an opportunity for a short break as well. I'm going to recognize our retiring colleagues, and most of these individuals have completed 3-year terms. After each has been recognized, I would like the retiring counselors and executive board members to step over to where the photographer will be stationed, which is right over here. Thank you, Curtis. And enable your photo to be taken. I also want to acknowledge with thanks the ALA executive, Correction, it's a group shot right outside the hall. Thank you. I also would like to acknowledge with thanks the ALA Executive Board members whose terms will expire with the adjournment of this conference. And they are Molly Raphael, ALA immediate past president, Kevin Reynolds, Executive Board member, J. Linda Williams, Executive Board member who has been elected at Counselor at Large and will remain on Council, and Jim Neal, ALA Treasurer, who has been elected to a 3-year term as an Executive Board member and will remain on Council. And I would appreciate applause for these individuals right now. Now, the list. We're recognizing our retiring counselors, and some of these individuals will be returning, and I will do my best to point out when that is the case. The first is Ismail Abdullahi, I have that right, counselor at large. Paulita Aguilar, New Mexico chapter counselor. Gladys Smiley Bell, counselor at large, who has been reelected. Stephanie Bronstein, Louisiana chapter counselor. Paula Brem Heger, Counselor at Large, Ann Crudson, Counselor at Large, reelected, Vicky Crone, Federal and Armed Forces Libraries Roundtable Counselor, who also has been reelected, Kelly Zarnecki, Counselor at Large, Cynthia Cizak, New Jersey Chapter Counselor, she has now been elected Counselor at Large and will remain. Aaron W. Dobbs, Counselor at Large, has been elected the LEDA Counselor and will remain on Council. Wanda Dole, Library Research Roundtable Counselor, has been reelected. Cynthia E. Dotton, Library Instruction Roundtable Counselor, also reelected. Karen E. Downing, Counselor at Large, reelected. Naftali Ferris, Counselor at Large. Maggie Farrell, ACRL Counselor. Valerie Feynman, Small Roundtables Counselor. Valerie Fike, Library Support Staff Interest Roundtable Counselor. Mary Ann Fuse, Counselor at Large. Loida Garcia Fabo, Counselor at Large, has been reelected. Susan Gibbons, Counselor at Large. Saul Antonio Gomez, Counselor at Large. Suzanne Goodman, Montana Chapter Counselor. Janice Greenberg, Counselor at Large. Romina Gutierrez, Counselor at Large. Peter D. Hepburn, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgendered Roundtable Counselor, and he has been reelected. Nan Blaine Hilliard, Counselor at Large. Alexia Hudson Ward, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor. She is on the Executive Board and will remain on Council. Sarah Kelly Johns, the American Association of School Librarians Counselor. Sarah also was elected to the ALA Executive Board and will remain on Council. Melissa P. Johnston, Counselor at Large. Sarah F. Jones, Nevada Chapter Counselor. Sue Cam, Counselor at Large, has been reelected. Erlene Bishop Colleen, as you heard, Counselor at Large, is retiring. Terry G. Kirk, changed name, which I don't have, Terry, but Kentucky Chapter Counselor. Pamela Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. Charles E. Kratz, Counselor at Large. Carla M. Land, Counselor at Large, reelected. Chris S. LaRue, Rhode Island Chapter Counselor. Dennis J. Leloup, Counselor at Large. Adrian I. Lim, the LEDA Counselor. Rodney E. Lippard, North Carolina Chapter Counselor. Mary L. Mallory, Counselor at Large. Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large, has been reelected. Carolyn V. Neal, Counselor at Large. Kathy A. Parsons, Iowa Chapter Counselor. Richard Pastenbaugh, Oklahoma Chapter Counselor. Michael Porter, Counselor at Large. Michael is on the Executive Board and will remain on Council. Lauren Presley, Counselor at Large, has been reelected. Christina Dominguez Ramirez, Counselor at Large, also has been reelected. Hannah Gasho Rempel, Oregon Chapter Counselor. Elizabeth Ann Riddler, Counselor at Large. Susan Roman, Counselor at Large, has been reelected. Larry Romans, Counselor at Large, reelected. Doc Roth, Counselor at Large. Susan Schmidt, United for Libraries Counselor, reelected. Jane T. Sessa, DC Chapter Counselor. Sue Sheriff, Alaska Chapter Counselor. Jeff Slagle, Mississippi Chapter Counselor. Sarah Horton Smith, Counselor at Large. Rocco A. Steno, New York Chapter Counselor. John A. Stevenson, Government Documents Roundtable Counselor. Patrick P.C. Sweeney, Counselor at Large, has been reelected. Ben Trapskin, Minnesota Chapter Counselor. Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. And Amanda Williams, Counselor at Large. Now, a rousing hand of applause for these individuals. I now call for a 20-minute break. We will reconvene in 20 minutes. We will now take up new business. The chair recognizes microphone 4.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large.
Larry, we need the mic to come up.
Romans, Counselor at Large.
Try again.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large.
Oh.
Hello.
Microphone 4. Try now.
Larry Romans.
No.
I've already had my share of time on that.
If you don't mind, one more time. Let's hope.
Larry Romans, counselor.
There we go. Thank you.
I had a brain burp, and I'm asking the council's indulgence. Later this morning, they're giving the Stonewall Award that's named after my spouse and I, and so named after my spouse and me. So I need to leave early, and I would appreciate your indulgence in letting the prayer resolution come at the beginning of the discussion of resolutions.
Let's see a show of hands. Those in favor of honoring this request, we've agreed to do so. So I call your attention to Council Document 44 and invite you, Larry, to introduce the resolution.
Larry Romans, Councilor at Large.
I think you need to come closer to the mic. Let's try that.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Resolved that the American Library Association adopts, rather than adopt, as policy the following statement. The American Library Association is a secular institution in a country that is increasingly diverse religiously, refrains from having public prayers during its meetings. Then a minor change. Moments of silence may be observed during meetings, and leaving out the word only, to honor a specific person or event. And the correct wording is up on the screen.
And would you like to speak to the motion?
I would. As most of you know from the council, the discussion on the council list, there have been prayers at a certain division, and so people from that division requested that this resolution be created. And for that particular division, I think perhaps that they are resolving this on their own. But I've been to council meetings for 21 years and at ALA for 30. And I have never been in a meeting that had a prayer. So while we're saying adopts as policy, this really isn't a change. This is a reflection of the current activities of the American Library Association. Furthermore, we didn't want to try to determine exactly what moments of silence meant. But generally, the culture in ALA, moments of silence are to honor a specific person or event. So we just use that to kind of say, this is generally what moments of silence are for, but it doesn't say only anymore, so it leaves a lot more leeway for other moments of silence that are not religiously oriented.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Microphone 3.
Nan Blaine Hilliard, Councilor at Large. As I said on the council list, I still do not think that this is necessary. I do believe that this is simply a divisional issue, and we've been assured that they are handling it within the division, and I think it should rest there. It's not as though it's been a chronic problem. It happens once or twice. Why upend everything to create a policy for just one person? Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Kimberly Patton, Councillor at Large. I also wonder how necessary this is. I do appreciate all the work that's gone into this. I did follow the discussion. But I'm wondering if it's once targeted at one specific division, why we can't work with that division to make corrections instead of making such a sweeping policy. And I would really like it if we could make sure that this is clear, that it just covers meetings, because at some point during the discussion, we mentioned events also, which is what really kind of struck a nerve with me, because as a member of the Coretta Scott King Committee and the jury, and a diverse, and somebody who always goes to the Martin Luther King Sunrise Celebration, I feel like these events are targeted in this also. Those are events that honor a man who was religious, and religion is part of those ceremonies, and I want to make sure that we're not alienating people that we don't want to. Sometimes when we try to bring diversity into the picture, we end up alienating the very people we're trying to respect and protect, and I don't want to see us do that.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Deidre Conkling, Counselor at Large. Just to clarify, we've heard over and over from the Martin Luther King Celebration Task Force, and that prayer has never been a part of that agenda. Just thought I'd clarify that. The other thing is, I feel like we often pass policy things. This is a clarification of our current policy. This is not making new policy. But we need some words in our current policy that just makes it clear that this is not accepted. I do think that we have potential for it happening in other groups down the line. So why not just make it clear? And that'll be the end of it.
Microphone three.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large. I wish it were that easy to make an issue of such a very personal nature clear. And while I applaud Larry and Deirdre's attempt with this resolution, I do think we need to go back to the basics. We are a professional membership organization, 60,000 or whatever. Keith will tell us sometime what those numbers are. But we respect the professionalism that is inherent in our organization's values. And while I applaud the attempt to rescue when there is a problem, it seems to me that this is really unnecessary. And I hope that if there is actually existing policy, whether it's in the cloud or somewhere else, that we just simply respect that. If people object to situations they may find themselves in, there is plenty of opportunity for complaint, dialogue, discussion, even maybe a little bit of combativeness. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Karen Schneider, Counselor at Large. I don't know, I'm just, I submitted a motion to amend this resolution. Am I in order?
And it's in writing, Karen?
Yes, I've submitted it to Lois. Lois Ann. Okay. And my motion is to strike the final sentence in CD 44.
Thank you. So now we do. Is there discussion on the amendment?
And I had a second also. Yes, I would like
microphone
to
four.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. We had a number of people make comments about the moments of silence. And we have changed this three or four times to take into account all of those.
Larry, if you'd step a little closer to the mic. Thank you.
To take into account all of the discussion that we heard, including Karen's, and it now just says may be observed. It doesn't say only. So any kind of moment of silence that Karen wants to have is allowed by this statement. And I'm against changing it.
Thank you. Microphone four. On the amendment, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. I would not be in favor of the amendment. I think it would create a very restrictive policy, and I think people would interpret the refrain from public prayers as also including refrain from moments of silence. And I think the membership might find this truly overbearing. It just doesn't wash.
And I believe microphone three is on the original motion.
Can I make one comment on the moment of silence?
If your comment is directed to the amendment, which is the motion
the
before
amendment,
us.
Yeah. A lot of people.
Under name.
Valerie Feinman, yes, outgoing round table person. There was a big discussion last night, and I thought about it a lot afterwards. In our very first meeting, you had moments of silence for people who have died and yet were very good librarians. And so that's not a prayer, that's not a whatever. Someone last night said the moment of silence might be for you to say your own prayer in whatever religion you are. So that would be an argument to keep it in. So I want to talk to the resolution, but I think that we all have to think carefully about what a moment of silence is and what it means to us and what it means to all the increasingly diverse people.
So I believe we're ready to vote on the amendment. We're voting on the amendment.
Oh, may I speak to
the Karen, amendment? Did you want to speak to the amendment?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry. Thank
That's
you.
That's okay. Karen Schneider, counsel at large. I won't be prolix. By the purpose of striking the moment of silence phrase is that at that point it turns the resolution into what it actually is, which is the resolution on prayer in ALA meetings, because nowhere else does the resolution discuss moments of silence. And I am wholeheartedly in favor of ensuring freedom of religion and freedom from religion if people wish, which is why I support everything else in this resolution. What I do not support is for us to get into the minds of our members and presume why they are having a moment of silence, or to be so so restrictive and directive into what is really a very basic mindfulness practice that I am learning extensively about these days in my readings for my PhD program. And in fact, I am very, very adamantly opposed to the concept that ALA would go on record as being opposed to mindfulness. I think we could actually use more of it. So that is my reason for submitting the amendment. But as to the rest of the resolution, I find it very sound and apropos.
Thank you. Microphone four. And again, step up. Thank you.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. This does not stop a practice of mindfulness or anything else. We state that we generally use this to honor people and events, but it says may. It doesn't say only. And if you... if you want to practice mindfulness, that statement doesn't have anything to do with that, and it doesn't oppose that. So the reason for having this amendment is dubious to me.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Bobby Newman, ALA Counselor at Large. I am fully in support of the original...
But the amendment, we're talking about
the amendment. Yeah, I'm getting to that, of the resolution. And I have gone back and forth on the amendment that Karen has put forward. In the end, I am going to speak in support of Karen's amendment. Nowhere else in this resolution does it talk about moments of silence, and I fully understand Larry and everyone else's concern that the group who perhaps is using the opportunity to start their meetings with prayer will then just simply substitute silence in place of that prayer, something I personally would not be comfortable with. I absolutely understand the possibility. There's a burden here. I absolutely understand the possibility of abuse for this, but I think because the resolution does not address silence anywhere else in it, and because we cannot, as Karen said, get into the minds of people and understand how they're using their moment of silence, that we really need to strike this last sentence from the resolution.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I think without the last sentence, I would have to vote against the original resolution. I think the last sentence clarifies something that I think the original without that sentence can be misconstrued. I think this last sentence is a very important aspect of it because it does clarify, makes it very clear what we are talking about and what we are not talking about.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. I am in favor of this resolution. I'm not in favor of this modification, however, and I would like to propose an amendment to this amendment.
We're now in discussion of the amendment to the original resolution. So are you speaking to that amendment?
I'm speaking in opposition to it, in fact, because I do think that moments of silence may be observed during meetings, full stop, would be a welcome change to this document, excluding the possibility by striking the sentence in its entirety is not something that I would support.
Okay, thank you. Microphone four.
Good morning.
We're speaking to the amendment.
I am speaking to the amendment. Liz Bischoff, ESLA counselor, and I went to my ever-reliable source of information, Wikipedia, because I'm thoroughly confused on moments of silence versus prayer, because obviously I don't do either. And a moment of silence is the expression for a period of silent contemplation, prayer, reflection, or meditation. So I'm sort of wondering if we're splitting the proverbial hair here on whether it's prayer or moment of silence, and we're just using maybe a little different term for somewhat the same thing, where prayer might be, in some people's minds, verbalization, and moment of silence being in our heads. So maybe we can think about that in terms of whether we're striking something and whether it's different.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. I also want to speak in opposing this amendment because I would be very uncomfortable with public moments of contemplation or meditation, even if I do it on my own. So I think we have to be really careful, and I think that we need to be very clear about what are appropriate public moments of silence versus private ones, which everyone can do as often as they like.
I would just encourage the body to try to bring this to closure in the interest of time. We have several more resolutions. Microphone two.
Paula Bremheger, Counselor at Large. I'm on the same page. I'm standing to call the question on the amendment.
Thank you. So now we take a vote on closing debate. Those of you who are in favor of closing debate on the amendment, raise your hand. Thank you. Those opposed, raise your hand. Thank you. So debate is closed. Now we're going to vote on the amendment. Those in favor of the amendment, raise one of your hands. Thank you. Those opposed to the amendment, raise one of your hands. The amendment does not pass. So mark your ballot. Council document 44-7/1/13, strike last sentence, and then record your vote. Oh, it's, put it back up, please. I've got it in the text, but there it is. And now we'll be back to the resolution, the original resolution. And I'll ask, is there further discussion
on the resolution. Microphone 5.
Jim Kuhn, Councillor at Large. I have a motion to amend this resolved with a seconder. The amendment is as follows. The final sentence of the resolve should now read, moments of silence may be observed during meetings, full stop. And I'd like to speak to the amendment just to say that, I mean, a lot
and
of
Jim,
folks...
Jim, did you submit your amendment?
It's submitted it's in writing. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Lois Ann. Please go ahead, Jim.
Thank you very much. The points that have been made so far this morning are ones that I agree with, and I would just like to encourage us to encourage people to refrain from speech. It's not forced speech. It's not forced silence. It's just an expression of a permitting a moment of silence. I like it. I hope you agree.
So is there further discussion on this amendment? Microphone 4. Did I get this right?
Oh,
I think
sorry.
I think Pam, it's your turn.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. I will speak in favor of this amendment. I think that it's important to understand there is a difference between a moment of silence and a prayer. A public prayer, publicly expressed in this organization, is not appropriate. A moment of silence gives every individual a chance to decide whether or not he or she wishes to participate and what that form of participation should be. And I do think that it is something that we should allow. I think we should allow it in recognition of the rights of individuals and to decide for themselves what they want to do. And what they do in their head is their own business, and it doesn't affect anybody else, but it's satisfying for the individual. So I would support this, and without some kind of amendment that clarifies this moment of silence business, I would not be able to support the entire resolution, which would be unfortunate because I wish I could.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Hannah Lee, Delaware Chapter Counselor. I want to second.
If you just continue to speak at the mic.
Oh, sure, sorry.
Thank you.
Yes. I also agree that I feel like there's no need for us to even have this resolution. It's a divisional.
But you, at this point, you need to speak to this amendment that's before us.
I came to speak to the resolution.
We'll get back to the resolution. Okay. We will get back to it. Thank you. Microphone 2, speaking to this amendment.
As Karen Schneider, Counselor at Large, I actually believe that this amendment expresses my intent far better than my original amendment did. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Erling Bishop Colleen, a member at large. I think we need to wait just a second because what was up there was an addition, and really I think what Jim is doing is a substitution. So can we wait till we actually can
yes.
see that?
So we need to get on the screen the amendment that strikes out the last phrase.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why is this taking so long? This is it, right here. Yep, thank you. So I believe, microphone 4.
Bob Holly, IFRT counselor. As someone who is a member of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State for many, many years, the government decisions, though not binding on us as a private organization, have basically contended that moments of silence are in accord with the First Amendment and the separation of church and state.
Thank you. I see no other discussion. We'll move to the vote, and we're now voting on this amendment. as is posted on the screen.
Maureen, point of information, I believe. So if we vote for this, then that is what we're voting for. Then that ends the debate on both the original or not.
No, we're on the amendment.
Okay, I'm sorry. Paula Bremheger, Counselor at Large. I'm sorry, I just don't want to vote in ignorance. So we're voting on the amendment at this point, and it will be followed perhaps by additional debate on the original resolution, and that would take precedent if it were to win over this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
No?
If he's moving on, did he think of
I remain
so
confused.
Specifically, let me try this. Specifically, we're voting on an amendment, and the effect of the amendment would be to strike from only the phrase only to honor a specific person or event. So the amendment to the original resolution drops that phrase, and it's crossed out as you can see on the screen.
Okay, I'm not trying to. So again, point of information. So if I vote here, would we have additional debate on the original amendment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. And I'm eager. Why not? All right, hold on 1 minute. Clarification from our very esteemed parliamentarian. And thank you, Jim Neal. So we will be voting on the original resolution as amended.
Right.
Right, that's what I'm trying to do.
Obviously. That's how it works.
I'm trying to get to a vote on the amendment. Okay? Microphone three.
Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. Point of privilege, whatever it is. Madam President, could you please read the amendment, because I cannot see it, and I don't recall that anyone has said what it
is. I'd be very happy to do that for you. I believe the amendment is we're striking the words to honor a specific person or event. So the whole sentence then would read, moments of silence may be observed during meetings, period. So those in favor of the amendment, raise one hand. Thank you. Those opposed, raise a hand. Okay, the motion to amend, as I read it, stands. This is, mark your ballot, Council Document 44, revised July 1st, 2013, revised last sentence. And now get ready to vote on the main resolution as amended. So the screen is incorrect. We need to have the screen corrected quickly. It needs to read that last sentence, moments of silence may be observed. May be observed. Thank you, Keith. Okay, as soon as it gets up there on the screen, we're going to take a vote. Microphone five.
Rodney Lippard, North Carolina Chapter Counselor, and I'm speaking in favor of this resolution. As amended, there's been concern about us passing a resolution because of one person or unit, and I just want to point out that in our libraries, we often have one person or people who do things that are against what we think may be common sense or practice. And when that happens, we point to our policy. And I believe that that's what this resolution is doing, is strengthening that policy so that our administrators will have something to point to. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Valerie Feynman again. I am speaking for the policy. I live in one of those increasingly diverse religiously villages. We have 35% Asian, 25% Iranian Jews, about 10% other Jews like me, and then the rest of the people. Now, we've had a lot of... Bless you, the rest of the people. Bless you.
We do want you to continue, Valerie.
Thank you.
Okay. We've had some increasing battles between factions in the community about finances. Like one side says, who needs to have a community center? We're not a community. Or another group says, I last took a book out 10 years ago. Why do we have books? So anyway, we're trying to woo a lot of the Asians into becoming library members and to understanding what it is we're trying to do for them. And one of the things they want to do is look at policy for libraries. And I think that for people like that, we absolutely have to say that we're a secular institution, etc. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Peter Hepburn, GLBT Roundtable Counselor. The Roundtable Executive Board had an opportunity to debate this at its meeting on the weekend, and it voted to support this in principle.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Earlene Bishop Colleen, Counselor at Large. While the resolution now is much more acceptable, and I thank everybody for those amendments and stuff, for transparency, I'm a person of faith, and I particularly object to the last whereas, in that I don't think anybody can tell us what kind of message someone's sending forth. I think for PR...
Thank you for the point, but we're discussing the resolution.
Right, but what happens to this is, I'm worried about the PR that last resolve, or that last whereas does. Does that not get publicized then? Just the resolution?
The specific question is, does the whereas not get publicized? It's part of the resolution.
Right. Well, that's why I'm worried about it, because I think that there's backlash because of that one whereas.
But our parliamentarian is pointing out it's a policy that is used for internal purposes, and okay. We are at a point
just
where we're
the
discussing
question.
The resolution.
And it, okay.
Microphone three.
Hannah Lee, Delaware Chapter Counselor. Is it just not? Oh, I'm just too short. Okay. I want to say that I don't think that this resolution has any place in this organization. And I do want to second what someone said about how we're trying to be inclusive, we're trying to accept people of color, but by doing these acts, you're alienating. And I want to give an example. I have a good librarian friend, my ALA roommate. She's very involved with the American Indian Library Association. And within that group, and within her culture, it's part of the culture to have prayer in the meetings and in the events. And so by passing this, you're alienating a group that has been alienated for hundreds of years. And she has been so disillusioned, this passionate young American Indian librarian, that she is not going to renew her ALA membership because she feels very alienated in this organization. And my heart goes out to her, and I know of others who feel alienated. There are these microaggressions against diverse librarians that this group, the ALA, is not even realizing it's doing. So I'm against this resolution.
Thank you. Microphone four. And again, if I may just point out the time. Microphone four.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. I hear what my colleague just said, and I recognize the validity of what she said. It is difficult, but that is why I think that leaving in that moment of silence is important, because it does allow people to have, on an individual level, to do what is their own belief. And of course, ALA is a separate organization, so what we pass here does not necessarily impact them. They can still have their own practices there. I would like to say what I got up to say originally is I have friends that run the spectrum from very fervent religious belief to atheism, and myself personally, I think it's from one day to the next. It varies. There are some days that I think yes, and some days that I wonder if there's anybody up there. But I think all of them, my experience is that all of those people are comfortable with the idea of a moment of silence because it recognizes their individual right. So I will support this statement, even though I too wondered if it was really necessary and whether the solution to every problem in the world has to be a council resolution.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Patrick Sweeney, Councillor at Large. I'm speaking against this resolution for two different reasons. Number one, I'm concerned about anything else that extends our meetings, spends time in moments of silence when we could be doing the productive work of the organization. I strongly feel that people, if they would like to pray, they can come early. But what I'm more concerned about is that if somebody shows up, one person in a group of 10 people in a committee meeting, and one person wants to have the moment of silence and the rest would like to continue on, and everybody in the group is now forced to have a moment of silence when there's other things that need to be going on.
If I may suggest, unless the chair calls for a vote. So seeing no further discussion, I will call for the vote. Those in favor of this resolution as amended, please raise one of your hands. I think we're going to need to do a count. No, we're good? Okay. All right. Okay. Everybody's hand up just so we can be sure. If you're voting for this, okay. If you're voting for this, hand up. Okay. Thank you. Now, if you're against this resolution, please raise your hand. It's close. I think we have to count. We have to count.
Those in favor, please stand.
So those in favor, please stand. So the resolution passes by 70-64. Mark your ballot, Council Document Number 44, revised July 1st, 2013, as amended. We are going to move to the next item of new business, but before doing so, I just want to call to your attention, it is now 10:30. We have four resolutions, and I would very much appreciate your help in managing the time, the challenge that I face in managing the time. So I now would like to ask, and will ask, Councillor Al Kagan to go to the microphone and read only the resolved clause of ALA Council Document Number 38, the resolution in support of whistleblower Manning. Microphone three.
Al Kagan, CERT Councillor. Lois Ann has a revised resolved clause and also some other revisions. So I'm going to read the resolved clause as revised from comments we've received over the last couple of days.
And Al, it's now on the screen.
Thank you. Resolved that the American Library Association, ALA, recognizes Bradley Manning as a whistleblower who fulfilled his duty to report war crimes under U.S. law and the Geneva Conventions. And I would like to explain the other revisions and speak to the motion.
Please proceed.
Please look at the whereas clause number 11, which is whereas in 2011 ALA urged the U.S. President, and under that in your printed copy we have a new resolved clause which would be number 12 and a new number 13. Now I will read those for you. Whereas in 2013 ALA recognized Edward Snowden as a whistleblower who in releasing information that documents government attacks on privacy, free speech, and freedom of association has performed a valuable service in launching a national dialogue about transparency, domestic surveillance, and overclassification, CD 39-2013. You were all here for that. And number 13, whereas West defines whistleblowing as, quote, the disclosure by a person, usually an employee, in a government agency or private enterprise to the public or to those in authority of mismanagement, corruption, illegality, or some other wrongdoing. And that's from West's Encyclopedia of Law 2005. And there's one more that we added, and it's the one whereas before the last, which says, whereas Bradley Manning had an obligation under U.S. Army Special Schedule number 27-1 based on the Geneva Conventions to report war crimes. Now I'd like to speak to the resolution.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your indulgence in all these changes. Yesterday, I went to hear the ACLU speaker, Michael German. I imagine many of you were there. And I think he made some points that are worth repeating this morning. He is not only an ACLU spokesperson, but he was a former FBI agent and a whistleblower in the FBI. And he told us that he made a decision that he would leave the FBI before he started whistleblowing because he was aware that he would lose his job if he started that internal process. And he said that he now gets many requests from FBI agents that know him about the process, the internal process in working to doing whistleblowing in the FBI. And he advises them that if you start this, you will lose your job. There is no question about it. So he said that whistleblowing is needed now more than ever. And it's really the only information, only way that we can get much government information that is completely secret now. I heard in the membership meeting, Jim Kuhn say the same thing, that all three branches of government are now so opaque that the only way we can get information, a lot of information that we really need to have, is through whistleblowing. He also, Mr. German also said that he was very surprised that when he undertook his whistleblowing, that the focus became on him and not the information he was trying to whistleblow. And he said that there were a lot of personal attacks. And I think we've seen that on Ed Snowden. I think we've seen that especially on Bradley Manning, that people are trying to discredit the whistleblower, the person who is putting his life in danger, in order to discredit the whole concept of bringing that information forward. Bradley Manning is now on trial. This is the middle of his trial this month. And if we're going to make a difference, now is the time to make a difference, to make a statement. And hopefully, there's a whole network across the United States that is trying to do the very same thing. We are part, we could be part of that network and a part of that discussion. I know that there is probably going to be a move by some people to send this resolution back to the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the Committee on Legislation. I think that would be a very big mistake. This is timely now.
Your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Microphone 2.
Gina Persicini, Idaho Chapter Counselor. I think what I have is a point of information, and I'm curious, and as a learning organization, I'm hoping I can ask this question. It is new to me that we're looking at whereases and discussing whereas clauses in a resolution, and I'm hoping to learn why that's different with this, and in the interest of time, it doesn't have to be answered right now. It would appreciate that maybe in the report that we sometimes get after council, but this is new to me that we're discussing the whereas clauses and seeing them on the screen, so I'm curious.
I permitted it, Gina, because it was clarification and there were changes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Eric Cease, Counselor at Large. I think it's important that we not conflate Edward Snowden with Bradley Manning. I think they're different situations. In the Snowden case, there was a targeted set of information that was released that was good for us to have. On the other hand, Bradley Manning released so much information, most of which, the vast majority of which, did not fall under his obligation to report war crimes. You know, if you can use a tricycle and a Mack truck kind of allusion, he delivered the Mack truck when you only need a tricycle. And the tricycle was bad. I deplore the kind of things that the government did that he's reporting, and we need to, you know, be concerned with that. But you can't ignore the truck. And I think it's very clear that he overstepped his need to report in a considerable way, and I don't feel that it's appropriate to ignore that. And for that reason, I cannot support this. Another assertion was made last night in the council forum that talked about he didn't report it directly to the public. Well, that's true, but very clearly he intended it to come out if he reported it at all, and he did. And so I don't buy that argument as well. So I think that we can't combine these two cases into one, and I don't think that one necessarily reflects on the other.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Maggie Farrell, ACRL counselor. I do move that we refer the resolution to the Committee on Legislation so that they have an opportunity to consult with the Washington office on any possible implications.
So is there a seconder?
Second.
And that was Councillor Margolis. And now, is there discussion on this? And this is the motion to refer. Discussion on the motion to refer to the Committee on Legislation. Microphone 3.
I speak in favor of this motion to refer to our committees. The Ed Snowman resolution that was passed yesterday is already out in the press, and I just think that we should give more thorough consideration to this before we do anything.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. I would remind Council that a previous resolution regarding Mr. Manning was at midwinter, and Council referred that to COL and IFC. They are working on their report, and they are planning to bring something to Council at Council 3. I think that for us to act on this today would be precipitous before we have had an opportunity to hear from our committees. That is their purpose. That is what we rely on them for. And I think we should wait until we hear from them before we take any action.
Thank you. Thanks. Microphone 3. Are you speaking to...
Well, I was going to, but I have a point of order. I mean, can we then defer to this action till tomorrow? In light of the information we just received, which was not highly classified or anything, but might inform us in some way, positive ways, or maybe not. It's hard to know.
I believe if you vote to refer, that will be the effect.
Okay. Then I'd like to speak against referring. We've already referred this. This is extreme. Oh, sorry, Mike Marlin, Councillor at Large. We've already referred this. We were happy to do, we agreed to do that, I think, as a council, knowing that Bradley Manning would be going on trial now. And 6 months from now, what will it do? I mean, if anything, I mean, it'll be sort of a backwards lens, I suppose, but won't be very helpful to the current milieu that we're in now. So I'm against referring it. And also, just let me quickly say, this is the third time it's come up. First it got tabled, then it got referred. Could we please, as a group, just vote up or down, yes or no? I mean, my expectation is that it's going to fail miserably, but hopefully there will be some counselors that go on record in support of a whistleblower, according to the definition. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Bernie Margolis, Councillor at Large. I'm observing two trends, both of which I'm a little distressed about. Trend number one is we get a resolution, and before we even begin discussing it, the resolves are changed. Maybe improved, maybe not. Now the whereases are being added and deleted and modified. It's not the same resolution, and there's not adequate time to be deliberative in terms of considering the issues, particularly when some of these are very substantial changes to the resolve clause. So I'm hoping that some part of the organization takes a little effort to study this to see if there's a better way of handling that, either through the parliamentary rules that we have or in some other process way. The other trend is that we ignore our own process. There are committees, there is a process in place for division review and roundtable review of much of our work, and people are just simply ignoring that and expecting, yes, and I respect my colleague Mike, but it isn't up and down. It's a deliberative body that we're part of that requires us to be thoughtful about how we weigh our vote and how we determine use of our resources and how our principles are applied. I'm going to vote against this because I don't agree with the main motion, and I'd just as soon put it away and not cause more work for some of our committees. But clearly, I support the idea that all of these resolutions must go through the filter of our process that's in place, and it's been in place for a long time, before they come here. And I ask that everyone try to respect that. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Deirdre Conklin, Councillor at Large. If you remember correctly, the resolution that we referred at midwinter, we watered down so much that really Bradley wasn't in the resolution that actually got sent to IFC and COL. And it became, again, a resolution about open government, and we keep voting for things that approve open government and approve whistleblowing, and that's what it ended up being again. And if we refer this, that's what it's going to end up being again and again and again, and we never once actually support a single whistleblower.
Microphone four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. I second what Bernie Margolis is observing. If the Council on Legislation is already looking at something that is similar to this, and given the fact that the document that I hold in my hands has a very simple resolve, and then suddenly on the floor of Council I've got all this other soup, you know, it's like making gumbo. Instead of having a clear soup, which is what the last resolved on this, which is what we picked up at the table, all of a sudden announced is everything has been added back in, including whereases and in the resolve. So please, I think Council on Legislation should take a look at this and put it together with the other motion that they were looking at and come back with a report. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. I'm speaking against referral because I think that we've put a lot of work into this, and I was really pleased at the amount of discussion at Council Forum last night that we actually managed to get to what I thought was our highest common denominator, perhaps, that we could actually do something with this resolution. And with respect to Vivaldi, I would not like this the tail to be wagging the dog here. And we are the policymaking body of ALA, and I think it's really important that we act now. I'm really worried about Bradley Manning, that this boy who was 22 years old when he did this. I mean, I think back to myself when I was 22, and that I wouldn't have been so brave and so naive, perhaps, but. He's on trial right now, and I think he needs our support. And I think what we boiled it down to is something really simple, that we recognize that he blew the whistle on war crimes and that he just needs that very simple support from us. And I think that we could do that right now. And we don't need to worry about the legislation and all the other things. I think we really need to act on it right now, and I would urge you to vote against referring this. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large. It may be moot since there's nobody else standing at mics. I just had a small point of order. It seemed like we were straying a little bit from the motion that's on the floor, so I would encourage that we close debate and vote on the current motion.
Looks like microphone 4.
I would like Julius Jefferson, Councillor at Large. I would like to offer a friendly amendment to refer to IFC as well.
Is there any objection to this? Okay, thank you. So we're ready to vote. Those in favor of the amendment to refer, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. Those who are opposed, please raise one of your hands. It passes. So, yes. Okay, we want to count. Thank you. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing up here. So those of you who are in favor of referral, please stand. Thank you. You may be seated. Those who are opposed, stand. You may now be seated. The motion to refer Council Document Number 38 to COL and IFC passes 90 to 56. So this resolution now will be referred to these two committees. We now, I call your attention to Council Document 41. Microphone 4.
A point of information.
Mary, could you step a little bit closer?
Mary Biblow, Councillor at Large. The motion to refer to IFRT and what was the other one?
It's to the Committee on Legislation and the Intellectual Freedom Committee.
Okay, but can we add a time that we get a report back for them?
I expect them to report tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay, then.
They're ready. Thank you for that. So again, I call your attention to Council Document Number 41 as revised on June 30, 2013, and this is the resolution on library service to the community in a natural disaster. And Lauren is ready to come to microphone 3.
Okay, let's see. Is this okay? Too tall for the microphone. I feel a little bad about this now because I've made revisions since yesterday. To take into account the feedback at Council Forum. But I'll read the new resolve clauses, which are actually simpler. Resolved that the American Library Association, on behalf of its members, acknowledges that many libraries across the country have provided library and emergency services in disasters, including storms, fires, earthquakes, I'm going to strike that, and floods, and applause those decisions. No, I'm not. Recognizes the significant contributions of libraries and library staff who have provided effective emergency response and recovery services, and responded to the needs of their communities following Hurricanes Sandy and Irene in ways that go above and beyond the regular call of duty. And three, sends a letter acknowledging the work and contributions of libraries and library staff to the state chapters in the affected states of New York, New Jersey, Vermont, and Connecticut to be passed on to the appropriate parties and ensure that such a letter is sent whenever libraries lead community recovery.
Do you wish to speak to the motion?
I'd also like to point out a few other small changes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
We changed the title to Resolution on Library Service to the Community in a Disaster, since not all disasters are natural. And I added a third whereas. Whereas the American Library Association has recognized and encouraged library service to local communities during disasters in the past.
Do you wish to speak to the motion?
It's basically the same as yesterday. I really would like to see ALA acknowledge the work that was done and set up a process to acknowledge the work that is done to serve our patrons in our communities going forward, so that as other libraries face horrific situations, they can also be assured that someone is going to notice, help them promote what they've done so that it makes a difference in their community. And I think that this sets up a process for that that will work.
Thank you very much. Is there other discussion on this resolution? Microphone three.
Good afternoon, everyone. Alexia Hudson Ward, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor and Executive Board. And I want to thank you all so much for your work on this resolution. I'm in support of it. However, I would like to make a suggestion for some items to be stricken from number three as it stands. And so I would like to recommend that we remove the names of the affected states and just leave it as the state chapters in the affected states. Because Pennsylvania, Maryland, District of Columbia, and Delaware, who were also impacted by both of these storms, are not included. So I would just like to make sure that we have representation for state chapters and the District of Columbia, which is technically not a state.
So I wonder if, with the consent of the body, that might be treated as a housekeeping measure that we could refer to staff. It appears that we have consent on that. Thank you, Alexia. Microphone four.
Liz Bischoff, ASCA counselor. Is the Bark chair here?
Yes, she is.
Can I ask, Clara, has Bark reviewed this resolution?
She's coming to the microphone. Thank you, Liz.
Yes, we have, Liz, and we saw no fiscal implications.
Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Ed Garcia, Counselor at Large. This kind of follows Alexia's comment, especially in Hurricane Irene. There were libraries in both Massachusetts and Rhode Island that were severely affected by those as well, so I'd like to have them included if possible.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Hattie Dudley, Arkansas Library Chapter. I stand in support of this resolution and commend the authors for making the revisions they made, taking into account the feedback they received yesterday and last night. And I do agree with Lauren, when libraries are responding to the disasters for their communities, the materials that are out there for us to support our communities need to include materials for how we serve our communities and not just how to save our books. Thank you.
It appears there's no further discussion. We'll vote. Those of you who are in favor of this resolution, please raise one hand. Thank you. This passes. Opposed, yes. It just seemed to me. Okay. Those opposed, raise one hand. Aha! Confirmation. So it does pass, and it will come up on the screen. Mark your ballot. ALA Council Document Number 41, revised 7113. I now call your attention to Council Document Number 42 and invite Councillor Ben Trapskin to a microphone.
Ben,
you may want to adjust that up. And please read only the resolved clause.
Ben Trapskin, Chapter Counselor, Minnesota. We have revised this since last night, and we've pared it down a bit, so...
And Ben, we have the revision on the screen, correct?
Okay. Yes, this is the correct revision. So we actually have revised the title to be Resolution on Divestment of Holdings in Fossil Fuel Companies. And then we have just one resolve clause. Resolve that American Library Association, on behalf of its members, begin divesting in the fossil fuel industry by excluding our three holdings in the Filthy 15, named in the Endowment Trustees Information Report to BARC, that have little or no significant negative impact in the short term on ALA. And if I may, I'd like to speak to
Please you. Speak.
Okay. So we have pared this down, and we were very mindful of the language in this revised resolution by emphasizing begin. We're not asking that, start effective immediately, the ALA would, divest of all of its holdings. We understand that they may want to do this strategically so that they may be able to recoup losses that they have in fossil fuels, or wait till some profits are realized before divesting. But we do, in my opinion, divesting is strategically not only the moral thing to do, but financially it makes sense as well, as fossil fuel companies are becoming more risky investments. And if I may, I would like the council's permission to call upon ALA member Terry Link to speak to the issue.
There's a question as to why. Okay.
Why?
If you would explain.
Terry has studied this issue a lot more than I have, and he can speak to the financial ramifications. And I know that's been some concern to some of the membership.
So I want to ask for a show of hands. Those of you who would be in favor of Ben's request, please raise one hand. Thank you. Those who are opposed, please raise one hand. I don't think it passes. No. Does not pass. Let me be firm. Thank you. Microphone 3.
Yeah. Ann Crudson, ALA Councillor at Large. As the seconder of this resolution, I also ask that you see that we're being very reasonable with this revision of the fossil fuels resolution. We didn't ask for divestment of all the fossil fuels like before, and I just ask that you look inside morally and responsibly and think about the future. I think we've already started the conversation, and the endowment trustees took a look at our portfolio, and I'm very grateful to Clara Bohr, BARC, the executive board, and the endowment trustees for coming up with the information report and for sitting down and discussing the possibilities. Green is very important to the future and to the new generations. And I think one of the concerns was whether we would be attracting new talent of endowment trustees. And I think you can take a look and see that the campuses of new, the campuses that are divesting have those talents and those future generations that could fill that role. I don't think that we should be worrying at all. We're asking for an action that would have the least impact on ALA. As quoted in the report, three holdings only from the 12 managers. And I just ask that you think about the industries and how they rise and set. I don't know if you remember the whaling history in 1800s. That thrived for decades, and oil obtained from the whale blubber was used for lighting. There were 700 whaling ships that went out and brought back whale. Whalebone was used for household products, but then they discovered kerosene and fossil fuels, and that took over. And I think that if we had continued on that route, the whale would probably be either endangered species on an endangered species list or be extinct today. I think we're ready to move on to the next economy. Just as we have survived as Americans that transition of the whaling economy to the fossil fuels economy will survive this transition as well, and it's time to secure a sustainable future. Thanks.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Walter Best, Texas Chapter Counselor. I agree that we have a social responsibility to our environment. However, we also have a fiduciary responsibility to this association, and I personally, like I say, feel that we have this economic responsibility, but our social responsibility to our staff, I think, is paramount. And as long as we are not able to support our ALA staff with a raise, I cannot support any motion, any resolution that would have a negative financial impact on the association.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Christine Lindhag, PLA counselor. The PLA board has directed me to vote against this resolution and to state that they endorse the report from the endowment trustees in BARC.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Valerie Feynman. I understand the money problems that people are thinking about, and we know that ALA has problems. But I believe also that this resolution says move slowly and very carefully. And I think that that is one reason that I will support it. The other is that upstate New York is fighting battles about fracking. And I really am disgusted about fracking. I don't know whether you have it in your state, but it is a poisonous, disgusting thing. And as soon as a company builds a center to have fracking and bring in all the new employees, they'll never give it up. So I'd want to prevent it from happening. And the only way I can do that to make this land available for my grandson and great-grandson is to vote for this.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Al Kagan, sir, counselor. I've just been talking with one of the organizers of our brand new sustainability roundtable. That's Melora Rainey Norman. She's at Unity College in Maine. And Unity College is the first college that has voted to divest fossil fuels. And there was no loss to their endowment. The Sustainability Roundtable has voted to endorse this resolution. And I would beg the council to listen to one of the organizers of its newest roundtable for 3 minutes to talk about this resolution. I ask your indulgence to invite Melora Rainey Norman to the microphone.
So those who would be in favor of Al's request, please raise a hand. Thank you. Those opposed, also raise a hand. It does not pass. Thank you. Microphone four.
Andrew Pace, Councillor at Large. I'm a little bit confused because I feel that we heard loud and clear yesterday that this cannot be done. So I'm wondering if this resolution passes and the ALA cannot execute the actions of council, what that means. This seems like a very moot argument.
I don't have an answer at the moment. Microphone four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Counselor at Large. I look at this and I look at the report from BARC and from our treasurer. I think it's a slippery slope when we start telling our fiduciary responsible trustees what to do on single items. What will be next? We forbid them to invest in sugar. We forbid them to invest in a whole list of items. It ties their hands too much. It makes their job impossible. It starts to make the whole thing of fund managers responsible. We may see people, if we vote for this, we may see trustees or fund managers just walking away because their hands are tied too specifically. If we pass this, as I say, it's the first item, and we will start seeing more and more items attached to what our people can invest in. And right now, at a time, staff is not getting an increase, or some highly responsible staff are taking a cut at a time when the subsidy is being lessened for our smallest group, ASCLA, and so on. We're just no coffee for us. We're nickel and diming, and here we are wanting to go against the advice of our financial advisors, Bark, and our treasurer. I will vote down.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Susan Jennings, NMRT counselor, and my first time addressing this body, so please be gentle. My question is, though, why just fossil fuel? I'm 49 years old, and I've been hearing about we need to lessen our dependence on fossil fuels since I was a little girl. I'm not saying that this isn't a good resolution, but I think why not word this statement to be more positive, or this resolution to be more positive and more inclusive to other ecologically irresponsible companies than just fossil fuel. Why don't we do something like encouraging ecological balanced choices in the future and have our endowment trustees to consider those in the future as well, so that we can hit all of our, you know, ecologically irresponsible companies. So.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Bernie Margolis, Councillor Large. First, a point of information. Many of us raised our hands to not permit people outside of council to speak because there were so many councillors online waiting to speak themselves. And I think we've generally followed the rule that if there are councillors waiting to speak, they have some preference. This is our body. Just a point of information.
Thank you.
Regarding this, I saw the word fossil, and I used to collect them, and now I am one. So it seemed appropriate to say a few words. The words are not in humor, though. First, the question's been raised about the technical issues. It is, given the design of ALA's endowment, virtually impossible to exclude a specific stock offering or other item from the investment pools because they are either mutual funds or other types of commingled investments. It would be expensive in terms of staff, tracking, other technical issues in order to do what is being suggested in this resolution. So that's the technical basis. So if you pass this today, I think staff would be spending years, and I hope it would end up in some dark closet, working on this in order to achieve the result. Maybe the companies would go out of business during that time. The second issue, which I think has been brought up, which I think is even more critical, we give to our executive board the overall management of our financial resources, including our long-term investment fund, the endowment fund. The executive board delegates to a responsible group of endowment trustees to set policies, to assess the results of those, and to be responsible and sort of take it as it is in terms of producing additional revenue for the association. And we become dependent upon that. To begin micromanaging those endowment trustees is, I think, a fool's journey. I suggested when I spoke on this the other day that Keith turn the lights off, quiet the microphones, stop the buses from running, stop the air conditioning, and who knows what else. Certainly deny us any alcohol, certainly deny us any guns, maybe deny us pornography. Elizabeth suggested sugar. Sugar would be on the list.
Your time is up.
In New York City.
Your time is up. I also want to remind the body we have about 16 minutes left before our appointed time of adjournment. And we have one more item to go. Microphone 4.
Tom Wilding, Councillor at Large, and probably a little bit closer to fossilization than Bernie is. As I get closer and closer to not being part of the environment, I worry more and more about the environment that I'm leaving behind. I have two principles that I try to speak to in management, or at least I could remember the two a minute ago. I think I've forgotten one of them. One is that you put your money where your mouth is. And its companion one is wherever you put your money, those are your real priorities. I think our environment needs to be a high priority. And if it costs us a little bit to put our money where our mouth is, that the environment is an important thing and that ALA recognizes that and wants to begin divesting, I think we should support that. So I'll be voting for this, even though I see some of the issues related to it that people have raised, and that I'm not even positive that it technically can be done. I still think it's important to make the statement that ALA thinks this is important.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. I've been raising some questions on the list that I don't think have been answered. One of them is, looking at it strictly from ALA's finances, but from the company's finances, what will the impact be on the Filthy 15 organizations like ours, colleges and universities, pension funds, etc., divest themselves of shares? What kind of message will it send to the management of the companies? And secondly, would we be more effective being active as shareholders in companies or in these funds and going to the shareholders' meetings and speaking out in favor of what we feel is socially and ethically responsible? Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Oh, sorry. Mike Marlin, Counselor at Large. I think I'd like to echo what Tom Wilding said, that I think ALA needs to go on record and make a statement, given that this may be a process that takes a little while to implement. And just as we did with divesting from apartheid companies, I forget what year that was. Where our social responsibility is part of our mission. And I recognize that some of the technicalities that have been raised, and I completely understand that. But I think that the time is ripe to go on record right now. And the younger generations are at stake in terms of the future of our planet and what might happen. And I think whoever it was that raised the idea earlier about including other types of environmentally destructive companies, we should look into that, and we can. And there's nothing preventing us from doing that down the road. So I will definitely support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Jenny Emanuel, Council at Large. I'm against this mainly because I feel like we have spent a lot of time trying to study and implement this, and it has such a small impact on both our endowment and on just the state of fossil fuels and the companies that control them. I'd really rather spend our energy on looking at salaries and the librarian job crisis so that librarians have the money to go and invest and they can make their own decisions on their investments related to divestment in fossil fuels. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Mary Biblow, Counselor at Large. Just yesterday, we passed the resolution on ALA's commitment to literacy. I think we all need to take a real good look at that, because we're facing some real crucial issues today concerning fossil energy. I would like to first say that ALA Executive Board and ALA as a body has the right to determine and to instruct the endowment investors. And we should be looking not so worried about today's library, but we should be worried about the future of ALA's libraries. We shouldn't jeopardize the future by trying to save a nickel and a dime.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor, and I will try to be brief.
I think the economic consequences of the already irreversible environmental damage that is going on in the world has got a very real impact on the economic and the social stability of this association. We've raised our children and our grandchildren to be environmentally very conscious and aware. 20 or 30 years from now, there will be people, please, standing here in this council, and they will be dealing with the consequences of the decisions we are making here today. If you're talking about economic impact, it's environmental damage is damaging the social and economic stability of this country, of our lives, of this association. It's impacting libraries, it's impacting salaries, it's impacting resources available to us to deal with the damage that we are causing because we are not confronting and facing the consequences of this problem. So I urge you to support this resolution.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Karen Schneider, Counselor at Large. I speak against this motion for a couple of reasons. The first is I don't believe there are strong outcomes tied to divesting. It's not the same as a boycott. If we, ALA, sell stock, the Koch brothers will buy it. Second, I would rather see ALA look very hard at its own carbon footprint and take aggressive stands in several areas, such as shareholder activism, which will be impossible if we divest ourselves of those stocks, and looking at moving to one single face-to-face meeting per year rather than two. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Molly Raphael, member of the executive board. Being mindful of the time and that we have one more item on the agenda, I move to extend until we complete the agenda, extend the time until we complete the agenda, since we can't do that if we run out of time.
A second from Nick Buren. And how many would be in favor of extending the time? Those opposed, raise your hand. So we've agreed to extend the time if necessary. Microphone five.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. Just a point that has not yet been raised about the American Library Association and its obligations in this area. In the new policy manual, Section 8.1, Mission Priority Areas and Goals, this fits very well under the goal area of organizational excellence, which reads briefly, ALA operates effectively, efficiently, creatively, and in a socially responsible fashion to accomplish its mission. This is I'm bringing this up because that's something that was not included in the e-form that was submitted, but I think is extremely relevant and is one reason why I will be supporting this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Okay.
Oh, you've spoken.
Well, I tried to get another person to speak.
But if you just wait.
Okay.
Just wait. I'm sorry. Microphone five.
Charles Kraft, Counselor at Large. I'm going to vote to support this resolution. And even if this goes down to defeat, I want to extend what I said last night in the council forum. With all due respect to the executive board, because I have served on the executive board, I understand the fiduciary responsibility of the executive board, the endowment trustees, and even this council. But this issue is not going to go away. It's being discussed all over the country at American universities and colleges. And so I think this is a small step, but even if this does not pass today, you know, the board and this council needs to look at this issue, because this issue is going to come up over and over again and is not going to go away. We have an obligation. On our campuses today, this is not coming from people of my age. These issues are being raised by the students, all right? And I don't see many students in this room, but the students are the future of this association, and these are the people that are bringing this up on the academic campuses today. Thanks.
Thank you. Microphone three.
I was going to bring up what Charles Kratz just talked about the students.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. I apologize. I think the endowment trustees do have a fiduciary responsibility to increase investments and to look after the money, but in fact we have a responsibility to set policy that they can follow, and we can ask that our endowment trustees be mindful of our policy as the ALA, our policy for social responsibility, and I think we could take that forward further. I think as Howard Zinn said, you can't be neutral on a moving train, and we have a great movement across the country, and it is young people who are looking to the future and the people we want to attract to this association who are taking the lead on this. And I think we need to be seen to be on the right side of history in this case, and that they'll be looking back to us. And I think other councillors have referred to that kind of idea already. And just look at the weather that we're experiencing today, the extreme heat wave in the West, and the other natural disasters that are due to climate change that we've been experiencing, and it's already happening. And Councillor Margolis talked about turning off the lights and stopping the buses and the trains, but I'd like to talk about flooding the libraries, and it's already happened, and this is already affecting our libraries, and I'd like to see that we take a stand. We've already got a history, as has been pointed out by Councillor Mike Marlin, that we divested from South Africa. We did join that movement, and I think that to talk about being shareholders and standing up in shareholder meetings is not as strong a message. I don't think individual shareholders standing up and in the company in which they're invested is as strong a message as joining a movement. This is a movement, and so if we actually join that movement, it's a much stronger message, and I would urge you to support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Yes. Jim Neal, ALA Executive Board. I move to close debate.
Those in favor of closing debate. Oh, a second.
Second.
Lots of them. Those in favor of closing debate, raise one hand. We've closed debate. Oh, I need the against. Sorry. Those against? So you've reached 2/3. We're closing debate. So we're now voting on the motion, and it's on the screen in front of you. Those in favor of this motion, please raise one hand. Thank you. Those opposed, please raise one hand. I think we'd better count. So those in favor, please stand. So the motion is defeated. The numbers are 27 and 79 in favor. 79 to defeat. Thank you. 27 yes, 79 no. Thank you. Abstentions don't count under Sturgis, I'm being advised. The chair recognizes microphone 5.
Just a point of information. I mean, I've been here a long time, and that wasn't 27. I mean, I would just like to see it recorded correctly for the minutes.
So we will do the affirmative again. Thank you. Those of you who are in favor, please stand. So thank you very much. New tabulation, 56 yes, 82 no. So the mark your ballot. Council document 42 revised, 7-1-13. We now move to our final resolution, which is the resolution to reconsider. There it is. It's right on the screen. So the motion is to take council document number 39 for reconsideration and to refer it to the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the Committee on Legislation. Microphone 4.
John A. Moorman, Executive Board, mover of this motion. What I wish to say is sometimes as council, we act in haste. And our procedures, as Bernie Margolis indicated earlier, are in process to enable us to get total information on situations and to get the recommendations from committees within the organization that are assigned with this responsibility. On Monday, neither the Intellectual Freedom Committee or the Committee on Legislation had the ability to look and to make recommendations. I do know they are meeting this afternoon and that they will bring something back to council tomorrow on this issue. I also feel that it's very important as we look at items that we discuss that we consider the implication of those items upon the ability of our Washington office to work with legislators and the ability of librarians in their community to effectively discuss issues from a neutral stance. This is a reason for this resolution, and I urge its adoption.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Jim Kuhn, Councillor at Large. As the mover of the Council Document Number 39 and a member of the Intellectual Freedom Committee, I stand here with some responsibility for what might otherwise appear as a sort of a procedural snafu or hiccup. But I have to say that that responsibility is also shared by the calendar. It's extraordinarily hard, as we've seen this morning, to get full endorsement, to get full consideration, to get all the input that we seek for these resolutions that come before this body with the 24-hour rule in place. That said, we did request that this be on the docket for Council 2. It was, in fact, moved to Council 1. At that time, I should have postponed deliberation. I did not, however, because, in fact, I was prepared to speak to it, and I did, in fact, speak to it, and I stand by what I said. The other thing I would like to say about that is that as an Intellectual Freedom Committee member, I can report on extensive discussions about this resolution at our first some of our first meetings, discussion which influenced the version that came forward to council yesterday. There was no vote by the Intellectual Freedom Committee to endorse. And perhaps I should have actually moved as an IFC member that the committee vote on this to endorse or not to endorse. I did not do that, and I take responsibility for that. But I have to say, it's very important for this organization to be able to act on matters of grave concern to us in a manner that does not continually put off action until subsequent conferences, particularly on time-sensitive issues such as this one. We had lots of debate. We had lots of input.
Thank you.
This was passed at membership meeting, and it was passed yesterday. So I will be voting against referring this to IFC and COL. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Hi, my name is Diane Chen Kelly, and I rise to second this motion because of the three phrases that are essential to council: prudent deliberation, thoughtful consideration, and unintended consequences. As a thoughtful, deliberate body, council could have benefited from more information from the Committee on Legislation and the Intellectual Freedom Committee, and we still could benefit from their consideration tonight to learn more tomorrow. And from time to time, we need to consider all of the unintended consequences of passing the resolution identifying Edward Snowden as a whistleblower. Yesterday, during our deliberations, the statement was made that the resolution did not pass judgment. But after more thorough discussion with the Washington office and with counselors informally during the forum and throughout the conference, I believe this is in fact not true. It jumps to a decision, it paralyzes our lobbyists and our Washington office from working effectively with legislators. William Binney, a whistleblower who also disclosed details of NSA's mass surveillance activities, stated in the press, "After Snowden began leaking allegations that the U.S. was hacking into China, he was transitioning from a whistleblower to a traitor. Imagine after events continue to evolve and we learn more, or if Snowden continues to release some of these classified documents he's removed from our country, that his status is determined to be both whistleblower and espionage traitor. How would you like to consider supporting a resolve clause edited that the ALA recognizes Edward Snowden as a whistleblower and traitor who, in releasing information that documents government attacks on privacy, free speech, and freedom of association, has performed a valuable service in launching a national dialogue about transparency, domestic surveillance, and overclassification? Just the addition of those two words makes me uncomfortable enough to urge you, if you have any concern, to please move this for reconsideration.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Al Kagan, CERT counselor. I really have to respond to that last statement. Social Responsibilities Roundtable brought William Binney to our conference. Many people heard him speak. He was a man of great integrity. I believe that the quote that was just made must be taken out of context. I ate dinner with the man and long discussions with him. I don't believe he would have said that. I really think we need to look at the effect of what the whistleblowers are doing. The whistleblowers, in this case, have shown that the NSA is monitoring all of our email and all of our phone calls and more. William Binney told us about that. He didn't have the documents, but he said that in his talk. Now we have the documentation. This is now national news. Most Americans are offended by what the NSA is doing. ALA membership meeting was offended by what the NSA is doing. That's why they voted to support what we said about Ed Snowden. We overwhelmingly passed this resolution in the council, and I think it's because the councilors are offended by the kind of Orwellian situation we have now in this country. To refer this back to committees that are not likely to even put Ed Snowden's name in their resolution tomorrow would be a travesty, and I hope we don't do it.
Thank you. I would just remind us this is discussion on this motion. Microphone four.
Mario Gonzalez, Councilor at Large. I'm going to respond to Councilor Kagan. We're not referring it back. We're referring it forward. These committees have the intellect, the resources, and the ability to give us more information than I believe we had when we voted on the original motion. I also appreciate Councilor Shen's remark about unintended consequences. I feel that we only have 1-inch information out of a 100-foot iceberg, and I'd like to know more about Edward Snowden and what has happened with his coming forward and telling us about NSA and other activities in the United States government. I have no idea what he's saying about us in the governments that he has visited in China and Russia, and perhaps other ones that he'll go if he ends up in Ecuador. But I want to have our committees that have been asked by the association to deliberate on this and report back to us. Thank you very much. So I strongly support this motion.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large. We passed the resolution. However, if Intellectual Freedom Committee or the Committee on Legislation, as they report out tomorrow, wish to bring issues up with regard to it as action points, there is nothing to stop them. So I don't see the necessity for this particular resolution.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Brian Schottlander, Lex Division Counselor. Yesterday, before we had said it was okay, I took a moment of silence and cursed Roberts for not allowing my abstention on this vote to be counted. And I abstained from it at the time because I was deeply uncomfortable with it, and I actually welcome the proposed reconsideration and input from the IFC and COL, and strongly support Councillor Mormon's recommendation.
Thank you. Microphone three.
This is Ann Crutzen, Councillor at Large.
I would like also to speak to this motion, and I'm on the Intellectual Freedom Committee as well, and I will attest to Councillor Kuhn's remark about it being, I thought, was we had lots of sufficient debate, but of course always afterwards somebody wants to say something, but I feel that it doesn't need to go to intellectual freedom again. And I just wanted to add, as I'm up here, I was kind of wondering whether I should come up here or say something, but I really deeply believe in the truth. I hope everyone will search within themselves to see what kind of media smearing that's been going on, and that they should think about how one thinks about a whistleblower. Is there really a whistleblower archetype? Do they have to be over 40? And the ones that have been brought up in resolutions, Bradley Manning, Edward Snowden, these are people who are younger than 30. And I say that because there's been a Time magazine article equating the informers, it's called The Informers, Why a New Generation of Hacktivists is Driven to Spill Government Secrets. But to label a whole generation as geeks who leak is really just unfair, and I think it's a stereotype. So please do search within yourself.
Thank you. Microphone 3.
Molly Raphael, a member of the executive board. I speak in favor of this motion. I actually am kicking myself for not, and frankly, I think all of you who have been on council for so many years should be doing the same thing, for not thinking of this when we were discussing the motion. We have committees that have taken issues from us, such as IFC and Committee on Legislation, and come back with resolutions that I think many of us have felt were much improved. I believe that we will get reports back on this, and I think the very fact that there are unintended consequences tells us that we should have been a little bit more deliberative. It doesn't mean we wouldn't have passed it, but we should have been more deliberative. And I was just going to stand up here and say everything that Councillor Gonzalez said, because it was exactly what I felt at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 5.
Charles Kratz, Councillor at Large. I certainly have no problem with it being referred, but as it, you know, if it does get referred today, I mean, the genie's out of the bottle, because American Libraries, on my iPad right here, has it already announced that we've supported it. Yes, it's right, you know, it was tweeted yesterday. We live in a social media world, so it was tweeted and on Facebook yesterday.
Thank you. Microphone 2.
Bobby Newman, ALA Councillor at Large. I am also speaking in favor of the movement to refer. In full disclosure, I did vote in support of this resolution yesterday, but in light of some of the information I've heard since then, I am going to change my mind and believe we should send it on to these committees to look at them. I think that there is real value in the belief that admitting that you were wrong only proves that you are smarter today than you were yesterday. And we, even though the genie is out of the bottle, we can take a step back and refer this to the committees that need to look at it.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Tom Wilding, Councillor at Large. I would like to move to postpone this consideration of this this resolution to tomorrow, to Council 3. And if my understanding is correct, it would then come up after the two committees have reported, and we would have a better sense of whether we need to reconsider this resolution.
Second.
So this is not a main motion, I've been advised, so we should continue to discuss this motion. Microphone 4.
I'm against referring this. Oh, I'm Deirdre Conkling, member, what am I, at large, councillor at large. I'm against reconsideration and referral back to these committees. I think that personally, I voted with full knowledge of what I would, of the resolutions and what they meant. And I think I read it pretty clearly. And I'm very satisfied with my vote. I know that when it we get the information back from the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the Committee on Legislation, they are going to send us something about, we support open government, we support whistleblowers, we want to work on educating our members about these issues, and we will no longer be supporting a whistleblower. I was pleased that we were actually supporting a particular whistleblower, and I do not want to refer this.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Jennifer Bocher, RUSA counselor. I have a question. It was passed. The resolution was passed yesterday. I abstained because I didn't think I was very well informed, but it did pass this body. If it does go and gets referred and they come back and give a recommendation or anything else, does that take away what was passed? What is the status then of what was decided yesterday?
So I've been advised we've pushed the pause button if we do this, or I should say if you do this, and when it comes back to council in council three, then we are considering the motion. Okay? Does that help you? Thank you. Okay, let's see. Microphone four.
Mary Bibelow, counselor at large.
Mary, just a little bit closer to the mic. Thank you.
Mary Bibelow, counselor at large. Here we go again. One more time, debating an issue that is pretty clear. We have on record that we support whistleblowers, I think. But when we put,
I beg your pardon?
But when we put a name to it, it seems to lose any kind of support for a whistleblower. Now, I've been here for as long as Molly Raphael, maybe longer, and I know what referral means when we refer something to referral to a committee. We used to have a treasurer. And if they didn't want this particular item to be brought to the floor, his main role was to get up and say, we first have to send it to BARC because it might have fiscal implications. I'm not saying you're going to do this in the Intellectual Freedom Committee. You might come out in support. But I'm simply against referrals. I learned my lesson sitting here in council for a number of years, what referral meant. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone three.
Lauren Comito, Councillor at Large. I'm against this motion. We voted yesterday to support this, and in my case, I voted to support the resolution because of the effect it has on my patrons. I deal with people every day who have to worry about whether they need a password on their smartphone because they get stopped and frisked. I deal with women of middle age who are just dipping into Facebook who are very concerned with their privacy. And so I really thought about this when I voted, and I think that most of us really did, that this is that privacy is a deeply held value that we have as librarians, and that this man, whatever comes out later, whatever flaws he may have or whatever he does later, did provide us a service, did provide us the proof of what we knew was happening, but couldn't confirm that, basically we're just being listened to. And if for nothing else, that now we don't always have to explain what metadata is. I mean,
Thank you. Microphone three.
Jane Glasby, Councillor at Large. I think that we've had a lot of discussion about this. It was really well informed. I think we had a lot of documentation, the research that went into the preparation of the resolution, all those whereas clauses referring back to all the legislation that we've passed, if you want to call it legislation, all the policy we've passed. And so I think to say that we don't have the intellect and we have to send it on to another body for their smaller body of minds, their intellect, I think it's a little insulting to us, because I think that we have thought about this issue and we are the policy-making body and we did think about it and it's timely and that to refer it back is just going to, we know what's going to happen. I mean, people here have the history, and as Mary Bibelow said, we know it's just going to be, and Deirdre Conklin said, we know it's just going to be come back as the same motion that we've had so many times, the same resolution, the same content, the same empty content, and we need to stand by our decision yesterday and the membership meeting's strong endorsement also. And I'm also and support an individual whistleblower as an instance of the whistleblowing that we're all so keen on. And I'm also kind of reminded by this thing about unintended consequences of when we were trying to move against segregation. And some of the southern states were, the librarians associations from southern states were saying, oh, please don't pass that because it'll make it really difficult in our individual legislatures to take this, to negotiate in our individual states. Please don't make the national, ALA organization force our hand. Well, I think that we have a responsibility to take a stand on things, and that if there's going to be a problem, I'm sorry about that. That this is going to might make life more difficult for the people going and negotiating in Congress, but I do think we have to take a stand of principle and not worry about those details. We are asking the employees of the staff of the association who are in those offices to follow our mandate as the policy-making body. Thank you.
2 points before I go further. The first is, it's just a few minutes before noon. I want to remind us of the time. But I also want to remind us that these two committees are reporting to us tomorrow and have indicated to us that they are ready to do this work should you take action on this. Mike, have you spoken already on this one, or am I getting confused?
So.
Okay, please go ahead. Microphone 3.
Mike Marlin, Councillor at Large. As the seconder of the resolution, I also want to urge folks not to refer it off to committees. I am very interested to hear what they have to say tomorrow, and I hope that IFC and COL directly address what Mr. Snowden did and what his actions have done in terms of our national dialogue, and that they don't just talk about transparency generically. Because we already know we're also in support of that. We don't need to go over that again. And as far as unintended consequences and all that, I have yet to hear a military leader say that, and I may be mistaken, but say that the actions of bringing this information about snipping into our privacy has jeopardized national security. And I've heard some congressmen get up there and bluster about it, and maybe they know more than I do, but apparently there's plenty of people in Congress who didn't know anything about this and still are in the dark. So I think that's kind of an interesting aside. And if it does, if at some point Mr. Snowden does do something treacherous or treasonous, that will be very sad. But it won't take away from the fact that he blew the whistle on illegal activity by our government. And this association needs to take a stand and not dial back from what we did over the last couple of days. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone 4.
Elizabeth Riddler, Councillor at Large, move to close debate.
Is there a second? There are several. We'll vote. Those who are in favor of closing debate, raise your hand. Thank you. Those who are opposed, also raise a hand. The motion carries. Debate is closed. Now we'll move to vote on the resolution that is before you on the screen. Those in favor of this resolution, please raise one hand. Do we need 2 votes? It's the motion that's on the screen. Those against, please raise a hand. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, Council Document 39. We are referring this to the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the Committee on Legislation. Keith, do you have announcements?
Yes, I'd like to report to everyone on attendance at conference. As of yesterday afternoon, end of the day, we had a total of 14,466 registrants, 5,864 exhibitors, for a grand total of 20,330. And that's compared with 16,700 last year. A great conference.
Thank you. Maureen. Please be sure to pass your cards, your voting cards, to the end of the table. Ensure that your names are on them. Oh, microphone five.
Steve Matthews, head of the 2014 nominating committee, and I'd like the consent of council to make a brief announcement.
Consent of council to make a brief announcement? Yes, please.
The 2014 nominating committee wants to remind councilors that if your term is expiring in 2014, you have two paths to be on the ballot. One is the petition. The other is to go to the election site and put your name in the running to be chosen for the slate. I'll leave there some memos on the back table. I'll also send it out to council. And number two, nobody knows council like council. So think about those people back home in the divisions, roundtables, et cetera, where you work, and encourage them before the deadline, August 16th, to put their name in there so we can keep new people coming, old people coming, all kinds of people from the association to keep our vitality. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone five.
Five or three?
Oh, I'm sorry, three.
Thank you. Nan Blaine Hilliard, counselor at large, with a very quick announcement. The quilts have already been cleared off. The quilts are... it's a silent auction to benefit the Christopher Hoy Scholarship Fund, and my tally as of 4 p.m. yesterday was that the quilts were bid at $3,787.58. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone two.
Gina Persicini, chapter counselor from Idaho, and a quick reminder that tonight there's a council forum at the Chicago Hilton in the Astoria Room. It starts at 8:30. If you have something you would like to have discussed at that meeting, please find me before the start of that meeting, even if it's 5 minutes before the start of that meeting. But please do that so we have it on the agenda. We have nothing on the agenda right now, so let me know.
Please be sure to note on the screen, we want you to pick up your ballot at the projectionist table. And microphone five.
Pam Hickson Stevenson, Ohio chapter counselor. Just wanted to remind the chapter counselors that our forum is today at 4 o'clock at the Hilton in the Buckingham Room.
Thank you. And I now, observing this movement, assume that I have your consent to adjourn.
So I had a
thank you very much.
Yeah. People are trying to go see Alice Walker.